When you're looking at 199A, the first thing you got to do is figure out what the taxable income of the individual is. And that taxable income for this purpose is done without applying the 199A deduction. Because the way they've done it, you go through and you compute taxable income like you normally would, and then the 199A is a follow-on deduction after taxable income has otherwise been computed. What this does is it doesn't impact taxable income as it's used throughout the rest of the code. For example, the taxable income limitation on percentage depletion, that number's not impacted by 199A. There's a whole list of items that are not impacted on this that are contained in the outline. It's page 3 is list of the ancillary items or items that are not impacted. There is also some ancillary impacts that are outlined on page 3 as well. One and specifically I want to mention is that if you take a 199A deduction, then the changes the rules regarding the substantial understatement penalty under 6662. Remember, the 6662 is the accuracy-related penalty. And if there's a substantial understatement by a taxpayer of your liability, normally 10% of the tax that's otherwise been required to be shown on the return, if you underpay by amount greater than that 10%, then you can get stuck with this penalty. If you take a 199A deduction, that percentage drops from 10% to 5%. Now, it does not make any difference whether the substantial understatement's related to the 199A deduction. Nor does it make any difference how big the 199A deduction is. It could be a buck. If you do that, the 662 substantial understatement rules are going to be applied by providing this additional new threshold of 5% versus 10%. I don't know the logic behind that, but that's the way the rule works. You can also count the 199A deduction in determining your withholding obligations for the individual. Those are two of the ancillary items. Okay, let's go to step 2. You are going to have to determine the trader business in order to compute this deduction. Here we have three trades or businesses, one of which, as I said, is mentioned as a specified service trader business. Now, you say, well, how do you define trader business? Well, the Treasury thought that the trader business as defined under 162 was good enough, and that's what they use for purposes of 199A. There was a lot of pushback on that, the ambiguity around what is a trader business, particularly with respect to rental property. The Treasury said figure it out, and so that's where we are with two exceptions. First, you know that if I'm an employee providing services, I'm actually in a trader business of providing services. An employee, that's trader business. And now the code adjusts that throughout for a couple of items, but by and large, it's a trader business. Well, 199A says, no, that's not a trader business for purposes of getting a 20% deduction under 199A. You're not going to get a deduction associated with your service income. And this is what that makes clear. Now, there's some that said, okay, well, that's easy enough. If I was an employee of a business, I'll just convert into an independent contractor. I now have qualified business income acting as an independent contractor. I get the 199A deduction. And the answer to that is, well, that would be correct if you've, in fact, changed your status from employee to independent contractor. But the regulations have a rule, a presumption, that said, if you were an employee and you change your status and you're providing effectively, substantially the same services to the same person or a related person, you are presumed still to be engaged in the performance of services as an employee, at least for purpose of 199A. That doesn't mean you can't overcome the presumption, but you're going to have to fight with them about it if they tag you and set you up. Now, you know, you've probably heard Well, suppose you've got the associates in a law firm, associates, a law firm, it's a partnership. They convert them into partners, or suppose they go off and form a separate law firm that enters into an agreement with their primary law firm. So you got law firm one they used to be in, they go and form partnership law firm two, and two perform services for one, they're a partner. It's quite clear this presumption was intended to say, if you do that, you're going to have to convince the service that indeed you've changed your status to that of a partner and not continuing to be as an employee. A variant of that, we got a, Patrick May was on that email chain. We got a question from somebody up east in our office in D.C. that said, well, okay, I've got somebody that's an officer of a corporation. Suppose he quits as an officer and they hire his S corporation, and he performs services as an the S corp performs the services, and he obviously would be the one performing the services as the owner of the S corporation. Well, I think this presumption, at the very least, would suggest that he's doing substantially the same thing that he did before for the same person, and that the presumption would work against him.